Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, reporting from our studio in East County. Today we open our show with a Capitol report bringing you highlights from opening week of the new Congress, including the swearing-in of Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the first actions of Democrats who now control the House of Representatives, as well as an update on the budget impasse and how the prolonged government shutdown is affecting millions of Americans and potentially putting public safety at risk. Next up, we'll have news about the first two candidates who have declared they'll be running in the 50th Congressional District. Amar Campanajar, a Democrat whom indicted Congressman Duncan Hunter narrowly beat by just a 3.4% margin last November, and Temecula Mayor Matt Ron, a Republican with a background in science. Then on our local government report, hear about the hot topics on the agendas of city councils meeting this week in East County, including Santee, La Mesa, and El Cajon. We'll have updates on a New Year's Eve fatality crash that claimed the life of a young couple in Jamul, as well as the death of a man in the back seat of a sheriff's patrol car in Santee. Now, if you're feeling a need to shape up after all those holiday meals, Marie Johnson from KNSJ will join us today to talk about some fitness classes from yoga to Zumba available at local libraries. The new year started off wet and windy, so Paul Cruz will have tips for you today on what to do during high wind conditions. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines, including the president's threat to declare a national emergency to build the border wall and more. Jonathan Goetz will join us later in the show as we look back at some local leaders who lost their lives last year and commemorate their accomplishments. Plus, hear about a sinkhole that forced evacuation of a mobile home in Spring Valley. Later, we'll be replaying Raina Menashe's interview with Lynn Morgan Spreen, novelist and author of the book Dakota Blues. And finally, from Public News Service, a look at the pro-children agenda of California's new governor, Gavin Newsom. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. On the 100th anniversary of women having the right to vote, more than 100 women were sworn into the 116th Congress on January 3rd, where Democrats now have a solid majority and oversight powers. Key challenges facing the new Congress include resolving how to end a government shutdown standoff, as well as investigating alleged abuses of power, collusion with Russia, and other crimes that Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller had been investigating involving the Trump administration, Trump campaign officials, and potentially the president himself. Democrats elected California Representative Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Pelosi previously served as Speaker from 2007 to 2011, and she's also served as House Minority Leader. In her opening remarks, Speaker Pelosi spoke of a mandate from voters to provide transparency, improve health care, and reduce prescription drug costs, rebuild the nation with green modern infrastructure, and more. She announced that the first bills introduced in the House will include an anti-corruption bill and a measure to protect Dreamers, or young immigrants who came to the U.S. as children. She quoted former Republican President Ronald Reagan's final presidential speech, in which he stated, "If we ever close the door to new Americans, our leadership role in the world will soon be lost." She pledged to keep our nation safe from threats, foreign and domestic, including cyber threats and terrorism. And she indicated that the current Congress has responsibility as daunting and demanding as any ever facing our nation. She pledged to meet that responsibility with wisdom, with courage, and with grace. And in closing, she stated,
"Together we will let it be known that this House will truly be the people's house." Let us pray that God may bless our work and crown our good with brotherhood and sisterhood from sea to shining sea. God bless you all, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Speaker Pelosi next invited her grandchildren and all other children in the House gallery to join her on the podium for her official swearing-in ceremony and then stated, "I now call the House to order on behalf of all of America's children." As Speaker, Pelosi is now third in line of succession for the presidency, after Vice President Mike Pence. Republican Congressman Kevin McCarthy, also a Californian, was sworn in as the House Minority Leader. Later he tweeted, "While we seek cooperation, there is one core principle upon which we will not compromise. Republicans will always choose personal freedom over government control." Getting down to business, the new House approved new rules, including a pay-as-you-go provision to require that new spending be offset by budget cuts, with exemptions allowed for emergencies. That measure drew objections from some in the progressive wing of the party. The rules package approved by the Democratic majority, along with a handful of Republicans, also requires that bills be publicly available for 72 hours before a House vote, creates a select committee on the climate crisis, and allows religious headgear to be worn in the House chamber. House committees are now chaired by Democrats armed with subpoena power, who are gearing up to conduct investigations. In an interview, Speaker Pelosi said impeachment is not off the table, but must not be considered for purely political reasons. After the swearing-in, the House passed a budget bill to end the government shutdown, but it did not include funding for the border wall. Senate Republicans said they wouldn't support it, and President Donald Trump threatened to veto it if it reaches his desk, warning that the shutdown could continue for weeks or even years. Talks between Trump and the new congressional leadership have thus far failed to resolve that impasse. The president remains adamant that he will not sign a budget without $5 billion for a border wall. But Democrats, who picked up 40 House seats in the November election, say they have a mandate to represent the will of the majority, who polls show don't want to spend money on a border wall when the nation has many other pressing needs going unfunded. Trump was unable to get his budget pushed through even when Republicans controlled both the House and Senate. The GOP still has a solid majority in the Senate, but not the House. Even if both houses were to come together on a consensus budget bill to reopen the government, Trump could still veto it, and the prospect of both houses mustering up enough votes to override a presidential veto so far appears slim. But that could change. Meanwhile, the impacts of the shutdown deepen as the weeks pass by, going beyond government workers missing paychecks to impact the American people, as programs such as SNAP, which provides food assistance for millions of poor people, runs out of funds. The IRS has no staffing to issue tax refunds, which many Americans count on to pay their bills. Many national monuments and museums remain closed. Unpaid Transportation Safety Administration workers at airport security are calling in sick to work and working other jobs on the side during the shutdown. The Airline Pilots Association sent a letter warning the president of safety risks for passengers, with maintenance workers also going unpaid, and trash is piling up in America's national parks, with thus far no relief in sight. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
For the past 37 years, much of East County has been represented by Duncan Hunter Sr. and his son, Duncan D. Hunter. Democrat Amar Campanajar came the closest of any challenger to defeating either Hunter in November 2018, when Hunter eked out a slim 3.4% win despite a felony indictment on federal corruption charges. This week, Campanajar filed a statement of candidacy with the Federal Election Commission to run in 2020. On Twitter, he thanked the 48.3% of voters who voted for him, adding, "I'm excited to run again. I'm ready to pour my heart and soul into this race, community organize, listen, learn, and become the representative the 50th Congressional District deserves," he posted. Congressman Hunter is accused, along with his wife, of spending $250,000 in campaign funds for personal use, including lavish family vacations to Italy and Hawaii, dental bills, jewelry, and more. If convicted in his trial slated to begin in September, he could be forced to resign his seat by Democrats now in control of the House of Representatives and may be sentenced to prison. Campanajar has worked for the U.S. Labor Department, where he gained experience in job creation. He has also served as Director of Communications for the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. A Christian of Arabic and Latino descent, he faced negative ads run by Hunter that the Washington Post denounced as false and that critics called racist. During his last campaign, Campanajar said he wanted to focus on issues that impact residents across our region, including bringing jobs to East County and improving health care while restoring, quote, national pride, not national shame, as 50th Congressional District Representative. He also called for action on climate change and investment in a sustainable economy. Campanajar heavily outspent Hunter in the 2018 campaign, drawing prominent national support to his campaign team, as well as an army of local volunteers walking precincts. The 50th Congressional District includes portions of San Diego and much of East County, as well as the Temecula area in South Riverside County. At least one Republican has also announced plans to challenge Hunter in 2020. Temecula Mayor Matt Ron, a scientist and land use consultant, has also filed papers to run. We'll have more on Mayor Ron coming up on today's show. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Temecula Mayor Matt Ron has filed papers to run against Congressman Duncan Hunter, a fellow Republican, in 2020. The 50th Congressional District includes much of San Diego's inland region as well as Temecula in Riverside County. Ron told the Valley News that he has formed an exploratory committee while awaiting the outcome of Hunter's September trial on federal corruption charges. Hunter is accused of diverting $250,000 in campaign funds for lavish personal expenses, including vacations to Europe and Hawaii, jewelry, dental bills, and more. If convicted on felony counts, Hunter could be removed from Congress and a special election held. But if Hunter is found not guilty, he could seek re-election. Hunter won re-election in November over Democratic challenger Amar Campanajar by just 3.5 percentage points. Campanajar has announced he will run again in 2020 or a special election, whichever comes first. Mayor Ron says he was disappointed by the name-calling and negative tone of that recent election, in which Hunter's attack ads on Campanajar were debunked by national media as false and denounced as racist. Ron says he wants to see a campaign focus on issues and believes that a changing district deserves more balanced representation. He says that quality of life is what matters to the region's voters. Although the Republican Party of late has denigrated science when it comes to climate change and sought to weaken environmental protections at the national level, Rahm isn't your typical Republican candidate. A scientist and land use consultant with a background in ecology and sustainability, Ron represented San Diego State University and the Pechanga tribe in their battle against the proposed Liberty Quarry. He has a master's degree in biology from the University of Nevada and a Ph.D. in ecology and conservation through a joint doctoral program at the University of California, Davis, and SDSU. He is now studying for a law degree at the University of San Diego with emphasis in environmental law and planning. He's worked on ecology and conservation projects across the western U.S. He also founded a consulting company where his clients have included the San Diego County Water Authority, Caltrans, Cal Fire Firefighters, and the Agua Caliente Band of Coahuila Indians. He also serves on the board of directors for the San Diego Regional Sustainability Partnership. Ron first ran for the Temecula City Council in 2014. Last February, he was appointed chair of the state's new Cannabis Advisory Committee, stating, "I look forward to discussing issues such as public safety and education with my committee colleagues to help guide the development of statewide cannabis regulations." As a Temecula councilman and later mayor, Ron has touted some Republican talking points, including supporting a business-friendly environment and fiscal responsibility on budget matters. He's also focused on parks and recreation, improving transportation, and preserving the city's historic character. An advocate of providing infrastructure for sustainable growth, he has also worked on a task force pushing state and federal governments to help ease traffic congestion on Interstate 15 in Temecula. In his January 2018 State of City Address, Rahm emphasized the importance of preserving the region's quality of life for future generations, a goal he hopes to work toward at the national level if he succeeds in replacing Duncan Hunter to win a seat in Congress. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Local Government Report, a look at some of the items on the agendas of our local city councils this week. El Cajon is looking to prohibit use of rental scooters by any company not contracted with this city. El Cajon is also weighing changes to a city ordinance governing free speech at council meetings and considering fining the owner of an illegal marijuana dispensary after repeated violations. La Mesa's City Council will hear a report on an independent investigation into a controversial use of force by a La Mesa police officer at Helix High School last January. A video showed the officer knocking a handcuffed female student to the ground. The student has filed a lawsuit against the city. La Mesa's council will also hear a report on proposed traffic calming measures and weigh appeals involving two medical marijuana dispensaries, including one that has triggered litigation by the San Diego Center for Children, whose office is located near one of the proposed dispensaries. In Santee, the city council's agenda this week includes discussion of the city's proposed climate action plan, as well as a presentation on community choice energy options that could give residents an alternative of purchasing power from the city instead of SDG&E. Santee's council will also consider a proposal for more developer funding of the city's sub-area plan, a proposal that has drawn objections from Preserve Wild Santee, which argues that this would benefit the developer of the controversial Finita Ranch housing project. You could find full agendas and details on your local city's website.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.
This is Marie Johnson with a report from Homul. Two young people were killed in a collision with a sport utility vehicle shortly before midnight on New Year's Eve in Jamul. 21-year-old Yanis Alecos Floros was driving east on Highway 94, approaching the Lions Valley Road intersection, when he lost control and spun sideways into oncoming traffic, colliding with an SUV. Floros was transported to a trauma center where, despite aggressive resuscitation efforts, he was pronounced dead early New Year's morning, the County Medical Examiner's Office reports. His passenger, 20-year-old Tabia Watson, died at the scene despite life-saving efforts by first responders. The accident forced shutdown of the highway for emergency response and the investigation into the crash. Reagan Resendez, Flores' cousin, wrote this tribute to the couple on Facebook. "They were amazing, beautiful, strong, caring, intelligent, deep-thinking young adults. I will forever hold them in my heart." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is KNSJ.
A man who died in a sheriff deputy's patrol car after being arrested for being intoxicated in Santee has been identified as 51-year-old Wayne Morris. According to Lieutenant Rich Williams, a sheriff's deputy saw Morris lying on the sidewalk near a Walmart store in Santee on the afternoon of December 23rd. When the deputy spoke to Morris, he reportedly sat up. The deputy saw that he had a bottle, but he appeared too intoxicated to care for himself, so Morris was arrested and placed in the back of the patrol car. But moments later, deputies noticed the man's breathing was labored and called for an ambulance. Soon after, Morris stopped breathing and deputies administered CPR until medics arrived and took over. He was taken to a hospital by ambulance, but despite further life-saving efforts, he was pronounced dead. The Sheriff's Homicide Unit is investigating, and an autopsy is being performed by the County Medical Examiner to determine the cause of death. Anyone with information is asked to call the Sheriff's Homicide Unit at 858-285-6330 or after hours at 858-565-5200. You can also remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alper.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm here with Marie Johnson from KNSJ. Welcome, Marie.
Hi, Miriam. What month is this? It's January, and I don't know about you, but that holiday overeating season is over, and like a lot of people, I sure need to get back in shape. And I understand that you've got some information for us about some ways to get a workout without having to hunt down a gym.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have to worry about finding a gym. The San Diego County Library offers a wide range of exercise classes for nearly every age, and that's going to include me. And best of all, they are free.
Wow. Can you tell us what some of the classes are?
The yoga classes are the most plentiful, with vinyasa, hatha, and other varieties offered.
Hatha, the name alone makes you want to go check it out, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And the great thing is that the classes are for all ages, from babies with their parents, through toddlers, youths, silver sneakers, yoga.
That's my speed.
Yeah, mine too. As well as bilingual, gentle, and adaptive yoga classes for adults with special needs.
Wow. Now, what if you're not into yoga? What are some of the other options?
Well, there's Tai Chi, Zumba, Qigong, belly dancing. Belly dancing.
Belly
I don't
dancing.
Know. I don't know how that got in here. Country line dancing.
It's
soul.
Actually very good exercise. You know, my college roommate took a belly dancing class, and I thought it was, you know, a joke. But boy, she had the flattest belly you ever saw after that. And, you know, they get that rapid hip movement going, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. It is good. It sounds like a very good exercise. Mm-hmm. So there's country line dancing, soul line dancing for ages 50 plus, the Feeling Fit Club, hoop fitness, and kids martial arts.
Wow, that's great.
Now, you have information on the county library branch.
Not every county library branch offers all of these classes, and some of them might have some even some different ones that we didn't tell you about today. You can get a schedule of all the available classes at the San Diego County Public Library website, and that website is sdcl.org. Again, sdcl.org. Marie, you look like you've got something else to add here.
I was going to say, if you are inspired to improve your health overall, the New Year, New You hashtag on Twitter has a variety of health and wellness tips from the public library throughout the month of January.
And that's New Year, New You. You is spelled Y-O-U. Marie, do you have anything else to add?
Oh, only that you're getting this news on East County Magazine, heard on KNSJ.
89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The new year opened with snow and icy conditions across much of East County, including several inches of snow on Mount Laguna. It also brought unseasonably windy weather. And next up, Paul Cruz has some tips for us on what to do during high winds and fire conditions.
Fire danger is not the only hazard during red flag warnings. Strong winds can cause considerable damage on their own, even without fires. Here are some safety tips from Fire Chief Sam D. Giovanna and East County Magazine. During high winds, the safest place to be is indoors. If high winds are forecast, secure loose objects ahead of time, such as taking down patio umbrellas that may become airborne. If you are outdoors when high winds roar through, take cover next to a building or under a shelter. Stand clear of roadways or train tracks as a gust may blow you into the path of an oncoming vehicle. Watch for flying debris. Tree limbs may break and street signs may become loose during strong wind gusts. Keep an eye on balconies for loose items that may fall. Report downed power lines. Treat all downed wires as if they were energized. Do not try to free lines or remove debris yourself. Avoid anything that may be touching downed lines, including vehicles, tree branches, or chain link fences. Puddles can conduct electricity, so don't step in the water. Warn others to stay away. Don't touch anyone who has been shocked, since they may be in direct or indirect contact with a power line. You could become a second victim. Get medical attention as quickly as possible by calling 911. If a power line falls on your car, stay inside the vehicle. Don't touch the metal frame of your vehicle. Do not exit the car until help arrives, unless it catches on fire. To exit, open the door, but do not step out. Jump without touching any of the metal portions of the car's exterior to safe ground and get away quickly. When driving, keep both hands on the wheel and slow down. Watch for objects blowing across the roadway into your path, such as falling tree limbs. Keep a safe distance from cars in adjacent lanes, because strong gusts could push a car outside its lane of travel. Take extra care in a high-profile vehicle such as a truck, van, SUV, or when towing a trailer, since these are more apt to be pushed or flipped over by high wind gusts. If winds are severe enough to prevent safe driving, get onto the shoulder of the road and stop, making sure that you are away from the trees or other tall objects that could fall onto your vehicle. Stay in the car and turn on hazard lights until the wind subsides. Visibility may be limited from sand or dust. Watch for obstacles that may have blown into the street. Power outages may cause traffic signals to be out, so pay extra attention. If you are near a wildfire, you may be asked to evacuate. Here are some evacuation tips. Leave immediately when an evacuation is recommended to avoid being caught in a fire, smoke, or traffic jam. This will also help firefighters keep roads clear, which allows them to work without obstacles. Call friends or family who live outside the threatened area and see if they can offer you a place to stay. Your local fire department, city, or county officials will also designate evacuation centers. Prepare an emergency kit well before a fire strikes. This kit should include a first aid kit, a 3-day supply of non-perishable food and 3 gallons of water per person, spare keys, cash and medication. If time allows, then pack away easily carried valuables, chargers for your cell phones and laptops, and anything irreplaceable, such as family photos. Ask family and friends if they can shelter your animals during an emergency. Keep a list of 24-hour numbers for pet-friendly places such as pet boarding facilities and veterinarians. Have a carrier for each pet and pack several days of food and other supplies for each pet. Also ask which shelters, if any, will accept pets. If you need to go outside while there's an active fire nearby, put on protective clothing like sturdy shoes, long pants, or a long-sleeved shirt and gloves. Cotton or woolen clothes, since synthetic fibers will melt if an ember lands on them. Be safe and think situational awareness at all times, Chief D. Giovanna advises. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. We'll have some national news headlines from Public News Service and then back to our local East County news.
The Public News Service daily newscast for Monday, January the 7th, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. Representative Adam Schiff calls Trump's threat to declare a national emergency to get his wall a non-starter. Also on the Monday rundown, what will abortion rights look like under Ohio's new governor? Plus, how much does a doggy really cost on the website? Topping our news, Representative Adam Schiff gave a blunt assessment after President Trump doubled down on his threat to declare a national emergency in order to build his border wall. Trump doesn't have the power, Schiff said, that for the Huffington Post. They report before leaving for Camp David Sunday, the president told reporters he was considering using emergency powers to build a wall on the southern border, the funding for which Congress has refused to provide. The government remains partially shut down over the impasse. The Post adds that Schiff, the incoming chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, told CNN's Jake Tapper, if Harry Truman couldn't nationalize the steel industry during wartime, this president doesn't have the power to declare an emergency and build a multi-billion-dollar wall on the border. And with John Kasich on his way out as governor and Mike DeWine heading in, supporters of reproductive rights are gearing up for a new battle in Ohio. More from Eric Tegedoff.
During his last week in office, Kasich vetoed a 6-week abortion ban known as the Heartbeat Bill, but he signed one of the most restrictive abortion laws in the nation, banning a common method used as early as 12 weeks into a pregnancy. Gabriel Mann with NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio says there were 16 abortion clinics in Ohio when Kasich came into office, and now that number has been cut in half. Looking at his record and past statements, Mann expects DeWine to be as extreme or more so on abortion.
he said he would sign a six-week abortion ban, completely disregarding the unconstitutional nature of the bill. He's made false allegations against Planned Parenthood and other providers. He's used the Office of Attorney General to investigate Planned Parenthood.
A last-minute attempt to override Kasich's veto of the six-week ban fell one vote short in the Senate. Republican State Senate President Larry Obhoff says the bill has a better chance of passing and gaining DeWine's approval during the next General Assembly, scheduled to convene today. Republicans hold supermajorities in both the House and Senate.
Governor-elect DeWine will assume office on January 14th. And in Pennsylvania, education advocates want Governor Tom Wolf there to include increased funding for some of the state's most marginalized students in the next state budget.
A letter to the governor from the Education Law Center asks him to propose an increase of at least $400 million for basic education funding and $100 million for special education. Federal law requires states to provide a free, appropriate public education for all students with disabilities in the least restrictive environment. According to Raynell Brown Staley, the center's policy director, from 2008 to 2016, special education costs in Pennsylvania increased by more than $1.5 billion, while state support for those costs increased by only $72 million. Forcing local districts to make up the difference.
Local districts have varying levels of ability to come up with the money. So we're asking the state to meet their legal obligations to ensure that students with disabilities have access to the educational services that they need.
She points out that inadequate state funding has led to Pennsylvania having the largest funding gap between rich and poor school districts of any state in the nation. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Wolf is scheduled to deliver the annual budget address on February the 5th. Cities in Texas are now leading the way in the transition from fossil fuels to renewables. Eric Galatis has more on the story.
In 2018, Georgetown became the first city in Texas to get 100% of its electricity from renewable sources. And conservationists are pushing Austin, Bryan, Garland, San Antonio, and others to join some 100 cities nationwide that have made commitments to transition away from fossil fuels. Cyrus Reed with the Sierra Club's Lone Star chapter says more city leaders understand that switching to solar and wind makes economic sense.
When citizens in cities look into the future, they see that the best option, both for the environment but also for the pocketbooks of customers, is to sign long-term contracts with renewable energy providers.
Last year, the city of Denton committed to get 100% of its electricity from clean power sources by 2020 and signed three major solar contracts. In December, the Texas Municipal Power Association announced plans to mothball the Gibbons Creek coal-fired plant, which supplies Denton and three other cities, due to high operating costs. Fossil fuel advocates say coal and gas are far more reliable than wind and solar and provide thousands of jobs.
Finally, Antoinette Kerr tells us some prospective dog owners in the Tar Heel State were taken for a walk over the holiday season.
Fraudulent online sales of pets are on the rise. According to Alyssa Gutierrez of the BBB of Eastern North Carolina, undelivered pets are among the top scams reported last year. Since the scammers have no intention of providing the dog, they tend to advertise breeds that are popular or difficult to find. Gutierrez said the photos and the lower-than-normal prices pull at the heartstrings and prompt people to open their wallets.
We'll try to find a pet on a classified website or somewhere online, and it ends up being a scam. It's really difficult to avoid because, you know, you see these cute pictures and you're just emotionally involved already.
A BBB investigation found thousands of fake websites that often use photos stolen from legitimate pet sellers.
You can go to the website petscams.com. They post information about bogus pet sellers. Also, the Better Business Bureau has information on accredited breeders and rescue shelters. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, News and Inclusion with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
They were prominent in business, government, nonprofit, education, and community activism. Beloved local leaders who passed away in 2018, though their legacies live on. Today, we honor the memories of these East County luminaries in chronological order of their passing.
A civic leader who tirelessly promoted East County and led many charitable causes, Chuck Hansen founded and chaired the San Diego East Visitors Bureau, served as an ambassador for the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce, and worked as vice president of community relations for Viejas. At Viejas, he oversaw the tribe's charitable giving to many organizations, including an annual toy drive to benefit underprivileged children. East County Chamber President Eric Lund recalled Hansen as a community icon whose years of knowledge and experience has helped to make San Diego East County a better place to live, work, and play.
A Colombian immigrant who became a U.S. citizen, Ernesto Barrera became a teacher and served as chair of San Diego State University's Spanish department for 15 years. Also an author, he organized literary symposiums that attracted the leading novelists and scholars of modern Spanish and Latin American literature from around the world. He loved to teach and never missed a day of work in his 30-year career.
Raised in orphanages and foster care homes, Dr. Michael Long became founder and president of the San Diego Neurological Society with his practice in La Mesa. A Navy veteran, he held many leadership positions, including president of Grossmont Healthcare District's Board of Directors, chief of staff at Sharp Grossmont Hospital, and treasurer of the San Diego County Medical Society. He was honored with the hospital's Medical Staff Distinguished Service Award in 2000 and the Grossmont Foundation Heart of Gold in 2017.
Sergeant Don Parker saved countless lives as head of the San Diego County Sheriff's Search and Rescue Operations for many years. Under his leadership, the all-volunteer search and rescue team had a 98% success rate finding missing children and adults at risk. He worked for the Sheriff's Department for 25 years, including working on patrol, in the jails and courts, and as a training deputy, on the SWAT team, and for his last 8 years, heading up search and rescue. Everybody in the world is here for a purpose, he once observed, adding that search and rescue meant being able to make a positive difference.
Born in Brooklyn on the eve of World War II, Marian Barrera earned a master's degree in linguistics at San Diego State University. She taught at local schools and was one of the first instructors of Spanish at the newly built Cuyamaca College, where she developed the lab for Spanish instruction that students still use today. Also a devoted wife and mother, she passed away just 25 days after her husband, SDSU professor Ernesto Barrera.
As editor of the East County Californian and the East County Herald newspapers, Greg Eichelberger covered many East County news stories and sporting events. He also freelanced for other publications and co-hosted the Movie Guys in San Diego show on Kogo Radio. His final post was with the Blackfoot Morning News in Idaho, where he served as assistant editor. It's been an interesting life, he said in an obituary that he wrote himself, adding, many sad moments, but also many wonderful and unique experiences.
First president and co-founder of the Lemon Grove Historical Society, Dorothy Nottingham, known as Dottie, was a mainstay in the community for over half a century. Born in 1923, she raised her three children in Lemon Grove schools. She and her husband led efforts to found Lemon Grove's first park and were instrumental in other community causes. Lemon Grove Historical Society President Helen Ofield recalls, Dottie and Lee were synonymous with the can-do spirit that pervaded Lemon Grove and the nation in the post-World War II period.
Co-founder of the La Mesa Democratic Club along with her late husband Gil, Gladys Palast was the first woman to enlist in the Coast Guard during World War II. Later she became a teacher and a passionate union activist in Service Employees International Union and the San Diego Teachers Union. She was a co-founder of Activist San Diego and KNSJ Radio, which established a fund in her memory to help young activists keep on marching for important causes far into the future. Her legacy has also been carried out by her daughter, Jerry Palast, who became U.S. Secretary of Labor, and her son, Greg Palast, an internationally famed investigative reporter.
A video producer, honored with 28 Emmy Awards, El Cajon resident Robert Gardner founded Gardner Productions and worked at KFMB-TV for 17 years. In a career that spanned 60 years, Gardner directed and produced award-winning TV programs and commercials, documentary films, corporate communications, and multimedia productions. He won many local, national, and international awards for his works, also serving as president of the Board of Governors for the Television Academy, and as a trustee of the National Academy of Television Arts and Science. Gardner also served as a longtime leader in the San Diego chapter of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, mentoring many young journalists. George Lewis, former NBC Today Show correspondent, said of Gardner's passing, "Emmy is shedding a tear today, as are all of us who knew and loved Bob."
Joyce Dunn taught kindergarten for many years in La Mesa and Lemon Grove schools. Born on a farm in Pennsylvania, she obtained her teaching credential and master's degree from San Diego State University. She was also active in the San Carlos Methodist Church, where she taught Sunday school and played the piano. She loved music and also played clarinet, flute, and organ. In later years, she moved to Texas to be near her daughter. Her son, Greg Dunn, is a columnist for East County Magazine.
Beloved track and field coach at Valhalla High School for 2 decades, Carter Yarborough led the Norsemen to 10 league championships and consecutive CIF championship wins. He mentored many young athletes to attain achievements in their college careers. A graduate of Monte Vista High School, where he was a track star, he won NCAA titles in the 10K during his own college career at Cal State Los Angeles. There, he earned a degree in sports medicine. He later served in the U.S. Army and for 20 years worked at Sequan Casino. Upon his sudden death in a motorcycle collision, Valhalla tweeted, "Valhalla lost a great coach and even better man."
Elizabeth Yeats resided in La Mesa for 36 years, where she was best known as the owner of Elizabeth's Attic Antique Shop. In addition to being a successful business owner and expert, she also had a passion for music and taught ballroom dancing for many years. Born in Connecticut, she married a naval officer and lived in several states, also starting a Girl Scout troop in Rhode Island for mentally challenged girls. She and her husband raised 2 daughters of their own, and upon retirement, Elizabeth moved to Lakeville, Massachusetts to be near her family.
Paul Jacob, husband of Supervisor Diane Jacob, was a Hamul community leader and retired naval pilot who worked tirelessly to improve fire safety for his community. He provided his ranch for use as an emergency shelter and fire operations hub during wildfires, also donating land for use as a fire station. He was also a founding member of the Hamul Del Zura Community Planning Group. Devoted to the East County YMCA, he helped organize The Branding, a fundraising gala held at the Jacob Ranch for 14 years, raising over $1.5 million for local Y programs. Also a pilot for TWA Airlines for 26 years, he never missed a day of work. He raised Black Angus cattle on his ranch, where future farmers from El Capitan High School came to learn their trade. Deerhorn Valley Antler editor Kim Hamilton said, "While his physical presence is sorely missed, his legacy is all around us, every day."
Richard Henry Alcorn served on the Hakumba Sponsor Group, the community's advisory planning board, helping to make land use decisions impacting his community. A local businessman, he was also a hiking leader with the Hakumba Hikers and Walkers. Richard Curran, a co-leader in the hiking group, recalls Alcorn as a force in the Mountain Empire community.
Bob Battenfield was a prominent advertising and communications expert who became a powerhouse in local nonprofits as their voice in the community. He gained leadership experience at Hoover High School as president of the class of 1956, also serving as sports editor, newsletter editor, and columnist. At San Diego State University, he became news editor of the Daily Aztec, later obtaining his master's in journalism from Northwestern University. He served in the Air Force and worked at Teledyne Ryan Aeronautical as PR director, telling the world about the success of soft landing gear on the Apollo 1 spacecraft. He became marketing director for Food Maker, Inc., which ran the Jack in the Box restaurants, later founding Bob Battenfield and Associates in La Mesa, where his clients included Drew Ford and the Grossmont Healthcare District. He volunteered for many nonprofits, serving as president of the La Mesa Kiwanis Club and Baja Presbyterian Missions.
They're gone but not forgotten, and may they all rest in peace. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
And Jonathan Getz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A sinkhole opened up in the Spring Valley Mobile Home Park on New Year's Eve, forcing the temporary evacuation of 2 residents as the hole expanded near their home. The sinkhole in the Sweetwater Lodge Trailer Park on Hamishaw Road measured 12 feet across by 10 feet deep. It was caused by a collapsed culvert. Water service to the facility was interrupted during repairs of an underground pipe, but fortunately no one was injured and no homes were damaged. Reporting for East County Magazine in Spring Valley, this is Liz Alper.
Well, Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Lynn Morgan Spreen, author of Dakota Blues, which won the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. In the last couple of years, my guest has transitioned from journalist, columnist, and human resources executive to full-time writer and blogger. Welcome, Lynn. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Lynn, although Dakota Blues is a work of fiction, the story is based on the lives of your ancestors, German immigrants who settled in North Dakota in the late 1800s. Can you tell us a little about the history of that, of your family, and what inspired you to turn it into fiction?
I went there recently, and I was just stunned by the stories that I was hearing from my extended family, many of whom I was meeting for the first time. They were telling me stories of how the immigrants, how difficult they had it. And I mean, they would come over on ships, and then trains, and then, you know, wagons, and there was nothing there for them to build houses with. No trees. They
really
didn't realize this. So they had to build like dugouts in the ground, and they lived essentially in holes in the ground for the first couple of summers.
I mean, winters.
Yes, through the first couple of winters, and then as their fortunes improved, they would build houses out of like clumps of sod called soddies, then stone, then finally lumber. And the things they went through were just so shocking. I wanted to convey those stories through my fiction. Although I'm not a historian, I didn't want those stories to be lost.
Right.
So by writing my what my preferred fiction is, a work of, you know, telling the story of a woman in midlife who's having to start all over again, she finds her resiliency by reaching down into her history and pulling up the strength of those ancestors. So it's kind of a cool way to be able to tell the story of my family
right. In
this way.
So for you, the history really inspired the story. It wasn't that you had always planned on writing this kind of story even a book.
Exactly true. The stories are just so stunning. In fact, if I could just say one thing, the Banat Germans, that's my ancestry, they had a saying, to the first generation is death, to the second is hardship, to the third is success.
Wow.
They took the long view of investing for their family's good.
Wow. Very poignant.
Yeah, I know.
Well, your book, Dakota Blues, was recognized by the Next Generation Indie Festival Award. As I understand it, this is a contest for independent authors and publishers. Would you like to say something about independent publishing? What inspires you to make it on your own instead of going the traditional route?
You know, I think that you would be making it on your own even if you went the traditional route these days.
Right.
I don't think there's any such thing the way that things are changing.
Yes.
And so I figured if I'm going to have to do all the marketing, you know, I have the kind of little red hen theory of book publishing.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to have to, you know, grow the wheat and mill the wheat and turn it into flour and make the bread, I'm probably going to enjoy the benefits myself. But more than that, I think even traditionally published authors have to do all of their own marketing these days.
Right.
I enjoy doing the marketing, but more than that, I enjoy the control, being able to create the book cover myself or decide what the format's going to be. And also, there's a greater profit margin, frankly, if you're selling your own books rather than having to support a Madison Avenue operation. So I think the idea is also that you can publish more quickly. You can publish a book in 6 months if you can get it written, whereas with the traditional model, it takes years and years and years to first find an agent and then to get a publishing house, of which there are fewer. So if you like control like I do, kind of a control freak, and also the speed and the revenues, I think those are my answers.
Yeah,
that's why I'm doing it. I would encourage others too also.
Well, it sounds like the changes that are going on in society are aligned with what you enjoy.
Yes.
I know you've said that you want people to read about midlife characters, and you have a midlife character in your book. You want them to know about the midlife experience and triumphing over age. What kind of feedback have you received from readers about having an older heroine rather than a younger one?
Oh, this is the most gratifying thing. You know, there are over 70 million people over 50 in this country right now.
Really?
And it's getting, you know, they're more and more every day. Judging from both comments to my blog and also the reviews that I'm getting for my book, people are saying, this is so great. I'm tired of reading about young people. I want to know what's going to happen in the second half.
Right.
And so the idea of a coming-of-age story at midlife is sort of gaining traction. And that's what people are telling me, that they're excited to read about an older person now and what challenges she has.
So what kinds of books do you foresee in the second half of your life?
For me to write, or the things that I think other people will write?
For you to write.
Oh, all I want to write about is this. The same thing. I love the challenges that we face as people in the second half. I think there is so much internal growth. We have so many gifts. There's so much power. Mm-hmm. And yet, in our culture, we really don't celebrate that.
Right.
That's what I rejoice in. I get so much, I enjoy that so much, telling people, you just don't even know what your strengths are. Let's talk about it. And that's what I write about in story form, in fiction.
That's an inspiring message.
Thanks.
Well, that brings us to your blog, also referred to as Midlife Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your blog and how you see blog writing in the modern writer's life.
My blog, Any Shiny Thing, I called it that because, like, you know, some birds, you know, they get distracted easily by shiny things. And
right.
I didn't want to be limited to one particular topic. But it is about midlife. And I have a controversial recommendation for authors as far as blogging. Right now, everybody's told, all debut authors, all aspiring authors are told, oh, you must have a blog, you must have a blog. Blogs are wonderful. I think you absolutely must have a website. I think as often as you can, you should tinker with that website so as to draw traffic to the website for the purpose of marketing your book. You need to know why you are blogging. If you're blogging because you want to express yourself artistically and you want to see your words in print and mm-hmm. you want to perfect your writing, it's really mm-hmm. a good vehicle for that. But for marketing, I honestly think it takes a lot of time away from what you should be doing, which is your number one priority, creating more stories. And if you are a fiction author, I don't think it's the best way to build a market. If that's your goal, there are other social network platforms already established that can give you a better return on your time for that.
And why do you say that? For fiction writers?
Because if I work really hard to bring a lot of people to my blog and they all buy my book, so let's say that's 3,000 people, I make 3,000 sales. Now what? Those 3,000 people are continuing to come back to my blog, we're communing, we're enjoying each other's company. My blog has grown to the point where now it's a campfire and
right.
we're all sitting around it talking. But
right.
those people have already bought my book. I need new customers.
I see.
If I want to reach out to new customers, that is not the easiest way to do it. It's gratifying for a number of other reasons, but as far as developing a platform for future sales, I really think there are other things that would provide a better payoff, to be
frank. Very interesting. Well, thanks for that insight.
Mm-hmm.
One last question, Lynn. What story are you working on right now, and when will that become available?
Oh, this is so exciting. It's a collection of short stories. It's called Boomer Love, Short Stories of Midlife and Beyond.
Hmm.
And the reason that I'm writing it is because I have so many stories in my head of characters who I want to show that they are, you know, dealing with this midlife deal and how they overcome the challenges and move on in a powerful way, and then they experience joy or... Not to be a spoiler, but in some of my stories, I actually have them see the light and then run back to their safe place that
right.
isn't so good for them.
Not experience the joy.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm going to be doing. It should be available in probably spring. But after I do that, then I'm going to do a sequel to Dakota Blues.
Okay. Well, looking forward to it.
Thanks.
Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Lynn Morgan Spreen, please visit her website at www.inanyshinything.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
The new year will look a little bit brighter for many of the nation's lowest paid workers.
minimum wage is rising on January 1st in 19 states. That includes California, where the new minimum wage goes up to $12 an hour for companies with 26 or more employees and $11 for small businesses with fewer than 26 employees. The law does not apply to parents, spouses, or children of a business owner, or to outside salespersons, trainees, or apprentices. There are also exemptions for some nonprofits, such as rehab facilities, and those that employ disabled workers. California's minimum wage is slated to continue to rise over the next few years, ultimately reaching $15 an hour in 2023 for employees at both large and small businesses. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
California's kids and young adults could benefit from a pro-kid agenda during the new administration of Governor Gavin Newsom. That's according to a new report just out from the nonprofit group Children Now. The agenda lays out steps the state could take to improve quality of life for the state's more than 11 million people younger than age 26. Ted Lempert is president of Children Now, the nonprofit that pulled together the ideas from 80 partner coalitions to form the agenda. He says the state could make a huge difference by focusing on the first few years of life.
It's really critical that the state invest in quality early childhood programs. So the agenda highlights both the need for increased access to quality child care, home visiting programs, developmental screenings, and really putting a key emphasis on the earliest years.
The report also says the state needs leadership to push to better integrate data from the various agencies to identify which programs are producing results and expand on them. Another series of proposals looks at ways to improve foster care so that children are placed with permanent families as soon as possible to avoid the disruption of multiple moves. Lempert says he would also like to see the state bring more services for kids directly onto school grounds.
We really need to ensure that health services and screenings are where the kids are at. We've actually gotten so siloed that now it's very, very difficult for so many families to get their kids to the needed services and the screenings.
Statistics show that California has the worst record in the nation when it comes to making counselors, nurses, special ed, and other support staff available on campus. So the report recommends a higher target for the local control funding formula, which would allow schools to hire more staff. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.